The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, hello.
I'm just reading this here. Reading this headline.
What do you got?
CNN.com. NFL player dating a porn star was a learning experience.
Okay.
I didn't even know this. I didn't know that Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady's backup.
Yeah.
Former backup, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the form is former.
All right.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking. That was last year.
Mm.
Yeah, he's with the 49ers now.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was asked in a press conference about it because he's been criticized.
Who is he dating?
Anybody famous?
Not Stormy Daniels.
No, I don't believe it was Stormy Daniels.
All right.
I really didn't spend a lot of time on the. Right before we went on the air is when I told you I was going through the headlines.
Yeah.
Just of CNN.com, just seeing what their headlines were.
Right.
What they were covering. It said NFL or dating a porn star. Interesting experience.
So, yeah.
Really? So I just saw it was Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah. I would think that would be a learning experience. Mm. I don't know what there is to learn, though, that you wouldn't already know coming, you know, to that situation already.
There would only be one question that I would ask from my position and my environment.
Yeah.
Is his mother alive?
Yeah. Mom, I want you to meet someone.
Mom, I'm dating a porn star.
What do you do for a living?
Yeah.
I don't think
from my mother, and I can still remember the classic words.
Mm-hmm.
And it was early in my radio career. And I think I've told you the story. I don't want to get into the names, but it was somebody who was huge in the industry.
Mm.
Huge. And he wanted me to work at a station in a really, really big market.
Right.
And I'm trying to think. I had 1, 2, 3, it's probably 92, 93, because I just was in talk radio a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still trying to decide whether to go into talk radio or just, you know, political talk radio or stay in music radio. I was still trying to figure out what to do. And this guy came to me, real bigwig, and said, I want you to come to my new station in this huge market. I'm going to make you the next Howard Stern.
Mm.
Is what he said to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget telling that to my mother. And she was quiet. And I said, well, you know, what are you thinking? She said, well, I'm just sitting here quietly wondering, you know, just how much money my son will sell his soul for.
Well, there's a price.
And I said, Mom, I'm not taking it. I have no that's no interest in becoming anybody except me. I mean, I never considered it at all. And good that I didn't, because the station flopped in 8 months.
Yeah, well.
You know, they tried what was called at that time the hot talk format.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, apparently I made the right decision. But I'll never forget. I was telling my mom the story about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. And he said, it'll make me the next Howard Stern. And she was just quiet. I said, what are you thinking? Just wondering how much my son will sell his soul for.
It was funny. One of the newest season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, Brian Regan and Jerry Seinfeld actually talking about that, saying, you know, at some point there is that one penny difference. Oh, no, I'd never do that. And then all of a sudden you reach that threshold, that one penny. Okay, yeah, I'll do that. You know, just talking about certain jobs and what they pay and what they don't pay. They were actually talking about like plumbers and people who dig ditches and everything else.
Oh, okay.
You know, and certain things going, no.
I'll never do that. Oh, well, I'll do that.
Yeah, well, it pays $20 an hour. It's, But you wouldn't do it for 19 an hour, of course. No, that nobody would. And then all of a sudden, 19.50 an hour. Okay, now I'm listening. But it's that one penny difference that gets you over that threshold. But, yeah.
For some jobs, yes. But and knowing you as long as I've known you, I believe you're just like me. No amount of money could buy my opinion.
No.
No amount of money could make me lose the everyday freedom of doing what I wish to do. You could offer me $10 million and you could offer me $100 million and say, could you be more moderate leftist? I'd say, well, no. But you got a great personality, but we're more moderate leftists, so you'd have to be,
right. You
know, in that. No, I just no, don't want to do that. Look, now we'll pay you $100 million, but we're a totally 24/7 BG station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that I could do.
Oh, that I could do. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, definitely.
Now, is it $100 million the first year?
I would even get my hair feathered. I don't even know what that means anymore, but I would do it. I would do it. Wear some bell-bottom pants.
Well, no, but it comes down to what we said the other day when we did the story on people talking about the American dream. Well, the American dream, to most people, is buying a house, being debt-free. I'm like, well, no, those are goals, but that's not the American dream. The American dream is just freedom. It's nothing guaranteed at all. Mm-hmm. It's just me being able to fail or succeed based on the things that I wish to do.
Well, you know what the American dream is? Hope and change. No, seriously, it is, because it's that blank canvas that hope and change was. For me, the American dream has always been that, because someone else's dream is different. The American dream is really about that opportunity, and that's what it is. That's what people come here for. Is opportunity to have a greater life, whatever that means. For some, it may mean, well, I want to make Bezos money. And for others, it's, you know, I'm good with making, you know, whatever and living below my means and coming home every day and putting the tennis shoes on and, you know, hanging out.
I know a guy who had the opportunity to become one of the premier play-by-play sports people in the country. And he has the talent to do it. I actually hired him at his first job. But he is that incredibly talented. He was out of college, at least in my opinion, the best play-by-play person I had ever heard. Whether it was for baseball, basketball, whatever. And he was offered one of the biggest jobs in the country and turned it down because he wanted to raise, he had gotten married at that time.
Right.
And his, you know, he's still in sports, but he's not at the level that he would have been. I believe at this point he would have been at superstar level. You know, he would have been a Troy Aikman or a Joe Buck, you know, that type of notoriety. And he turned it down because the town that he was living in is where his wife was from. She wanted to stay. She had a steady job and they wanted to have kids. So people make decisions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's what I value in my life, instead of the potential of being worth $100 million. He actually made that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend that was in banking and was made a ton of money. And it was just almost, I'm sure it didn't happen overnight, but, you know, we weren't close at that time. He was living in another state. But it seemed like just kind of a switch went off, and it was like, nope. And he bought a small farm, and that's what he does.
He's still in the sports broadcasting business, but he's not in play-by-play.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him, about a year and a half ago, and I hadn't seen him probably hadn't seen him in 20 years. And I remember talking to a couple of people, and I said, right there, that's the best play-by-play guy I still ever heard in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, do you enjoy what you're doing now? And he said, no, I'd rather be working back with you doing play-by-play, even if it was for, you know, minor league baseball and college basketball.
Mm.
And I said, whoa. He said, I hate what I do. I wish I could be doing that. He had a big smile on his face when he was saying it to me. But the fact is, I know that, you know, people make decisions every day that don't regret it. I mean, they'll sit there and say, yeah, I wish I could do this, but this was my first choice.
Yeah.
This is what I valued the most. Not that I still don't look at that and say, boy, it would have been nice if I could have done that, but this is what I chose to do.
Right.
And it wasn't about money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but the Garoppolo story I thought was interesting. We got a great show ahead. Maxine Waters as Jake and Elwood Blues. She's on a mission from God.
Really?
Yes, to take down Trump. Now, This is another incredible thing. Now, we've talked about the fact that President Trump, nobody else could have ever done this. Nobody else could have ever made. No other Republican could have made the Democrats think about the Second Amendment. No other Republican getting the presidency could make Democrats think and obsess about states' rights and start to understand the concept of states' rights, except Donald Trump. Now, will he pull off the biggest miracle ever? Since he's got Maxine Waters talking about God and, you know, their mission from God, can Trump bring the Democrats back to God?
Mm.
Even if it's, you know, God were against Trump.
Yeah.
Can,
oh, God, we can't stand him. Yeah.
God, please help us. But can the president erase the agnostic and atheist mindset from the Democrats? Trump and the EU on trade. We'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. Dallas Cowboys must stand, says Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
So apparently he doesn't care about what the NFL is saying. He's saying on his team, you got to stand.
Well, it's also a condition of their parole for some of the players. Not all.
The House GOP, 11 House GOP members, put in articles of impeachment against Rod Rosenstein. We'll get to that. The Facebook stock crash. Mm. Fox News declares strong solidarity with the CNN reporter after the White House bars a reporter from an event yesterday. Now, the White House said, this is a reporter who was after the press conference over, kept screaming and screaming and screaming. And we said, look, you can't, anybody else from CNN can come, you can't. Mm-hmm. If you're being disruptive here, the press conference is over, and you're screaming stuff, sorry. Fox News, though, standing with the CNN reporter on that one.
Mm-hmm.
More tapes exist between Cohen and reporters. That he actually, one of them apparently, he taped and didn't tell them. And a whole bunch more. Plus your calls and comments, too. We got a great show ahead. If you'd like to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to all the important stuff coming up on the bottom of the hour. The guy who destroyed Trump's Walk of Fame star.
Yeah.
The man who destroyed President Trump's Walk of Fame star with a pickaxe on Wednesday morning was bailed out, apparently, by another man who destroyed the star in 2016.
Okay.
Do they think they're getting somewhere? I mean,
is that the closest to impeachment they can get? Do they think it's not going to be repaired? First of all, do they think they'll just leave it there? And, you know, the destroyed star will just be destroyed forever? I guess they don't know. It's just a, you know, a piece of stone. You're not doing anything. But this is what they call winning.
Well, this wasn't like, because there have been the incidents of people just going there and urinating on it.
Right.
So they're walking by and they do it. But this guy apparently had a guitar case, had the pickaxe in a guitar case.
Mm-hmm.
So this was premeditated. I'm going to destroy Trump's Walk of Fame star. Well, they're going to put it back.
What do you think's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to repair it.
Yeah.
You've done nothing. So in 3 days or a week or however long it takes to repair it, nothing happened. But this is what they call winning.
You know, this is how childish. Look, I don't understand why people can't have passionate disagreements on policy.
It's not enough. They don't care about policy. They don't know about policy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In order to care about it, you'd have to know about it first. All you got to do is make something viral. You'll get elected, New York 14.
Then let me rephrase it. I don't understand why that isn't people's goal, to promote things that will get policy that they actually believe will help.
Because
that rage and anger in itself, untethered, is nothing.
Because I think this is a generation that's been raised on clicking the like button, being effective and being the most you need to do, right? So you need to achieve as many likes as you can get. This is the Facebook activist, basically, now applied to politics. That's what all of this is. And they believe if they get a viral video or if they get enough likes on their Facebook page, they've won the election. That's what they believe. That's all they need to do. They don't have to.
Yeah.
It's beyond even the meme mentality. It's the nothing mentality. All you got to do is post something you think people are going to click the like button on, make it viral, and then you think you've won.
Fortunately, likes aren't votes.
No, they're not. I'd love to see that poll of people of that generation of millennials that think you should be able to vote for president on Facebook. Or online.
Oh, wow, Twitter.
Right.
Should be allowed. Everybody mm-hmm. should be allowed to vote on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, because you can't possibly manipulate that, can you? But that's really, I think, what's at the basis of all of this is they've grown up with social media, right? It's been a part of their life for most of their lives. And the discussions really aren't discussions. It's little jabs back and forth. It's really not. It's repeating things. It's sharing, right? Retweeting. It's not having the conversation. So they don't care to have the conversation because they don't know or care about any of the issues. They really don't.
It's almost as if it's not even about having a discussion at all or even making a point of view. It's almost just venting emotional rage.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Excessive heat warnings and heat advisories stretch from the desert southwest to the Pacific Northwest, impacting several metro areas again today, including Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Portland, and San Diego. Meanwhile, the threat for heavy rainfall and flooding will persist into the mid-Atlantic and northeast. Flash flood watches are in effect from North Carolina to New York, as this seemingly endless pattern has been locked in place for the better part of the week. Most of the heavy rain today will be north of New Jersey into the New York City and Boston metro area, extending up into Maine. We'll see a clear swath behind that front from western Pennsylvania into Ohio, southern Indiana, the lower Tennessee Valley, and most of Texas. Now, there is another cold front extending out of the north, sweeping in through the central plains. So look for light showers from northern Texas through northern Illinois. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Their minds are always working. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. The good thing is the president has been consistent 2 days in a row on agreeing with what we have always said the trade policy of the United States should be, which is zero tariffs, no subsidies, and no barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has, as we have said over the last 48 hours, held opposite positions on it. And to explain it, because I did see that I was looking at our friend Mark Levin in his Twitter site, where he said he's really happy that, you know, because as he said, the president now this is the right move to do. And he said, we'll see how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing here. I'm still very wary that this is actually where the president wishes to go, because it has never been the president's goal. It's interesting looking through Twitter. And so many Trump supporters saying, well, this was the fifth dimensional chess. This is where he wanted to get to the first place. Well, there is no indication of that. And the explanation is simple. The president has been concerned since the 1980s about the trade deficit, not free trade and zero tariffs, the trade deficit. His goal is to get rid of the trade deficit. That has been his goal now for 35 years, since he really has become, you know, part of the, since he's had a media presence.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back to the old, I think it probably Oprah, where he was on, was Oprah, Phil Donahue, whatever, where he was talking about those things way, way back then. He was never talking about the fact we need to lower trade barriers across the border or across the board. His concern has always been the trade deficit, that it must be equal. The trade deficit must be equal. That is what is the definition of fair trade, when your trade deficit with everyone is equal. Now, over the last 48 hours, he is promoting what we agree with and have always agreed with, which is zero tariffs, zero subsidies, zero barriers. That means no caps. You don't say, well, there'll be no tariffs on up to 100,000 of these sold, and then the tariffs will kick in after that. No barriers. Zero. Well, if you have that, that means the United States, that means at that point, when you state that, your concern is no longer the trade deficit. It can't be. Because what you're saying is, the natural economy, which is people voluntarily buying goods and services from whomever they choose from around the world, is what matters. Well, then in a country like the United States, you are going to see the trade deficit go up overall. Why? Because we are much more of a consumer nation. And because of our technology and our technical expertise, and just the way that the world is labor-wise, there are many other countries that can produce their goods, depending on their supply chains, their labor costs. Whether they're a first or third world country, everybody has their different advantages. And so, in essence, our investment surplus will probably skyrocket. But the goal of the president has always been to even out, in his own words, is to even out the trade deficit. So I don't care if the loyal, absolute Trump is never wrong supporters, which wish to say that this was his goal all along, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he keeps on this road, I'm not going to have any problem with that. If you wish to live in that world, that's what Trump has always promoted, that's fine with me. As long as we head down this road that Trump has talked about the last 2 days. But understand, it's completely the opposite of what he was promoting during his campaign.
Well, and it's opposite of what he has talked about for ages.
Since the 1980s. Yes.
And I, you know, you ask yourself then, okay, going forward, let's just say there is a deal with EU and they actually get that on paper. It's a long-term agreement and everybody's satisfied. And we're doing away with trade barriers, or we're lowering tariffs or whatever it might be. Then you have to ask yourself, okay, then what about 2020? I mean, in running for president and re-election in 2020, does that change? Or is it enough to have your trade partners just increase what they're buying in the U.S., even though it's not a real trade balance?
Well, again, you always promote on your side, just like like the president did in South Korea. Well, they took down their caps. Mm-hmm. So we won. It was a big win for the United States. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let us ship more than 10,000 of these, whatever it was it cars?
Yeah.
10,000 cars in. Now they've upped it to 20,000. Well, we haven't reached 10,000. Even with the 10,000 cap, we haven't reached it. Mm-hmm. And so you're setting imaginary boundaries to begin with. We had talked about the fact that the European Union had offered, let's drop it to zero tariffs back in April. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the president who led with this. The European Union led with this back in April and May, as we brought you at the time that it happened. And so when we see, and it's fine if conservative news sites wish to say the president conceded, the European Union conceded to the president's demand, the president is a big winner here, fine. I'm okay with that. I saw the liberal newspapers, some of the liberal news headlines. President drastically switches or changes his position on trade. Either way, I don't care. All I care about is the substance of it. I care about industry in the United States. I care about people's jobs in the United States. I care about economic growth. And if the president wishes to promote, or those that follow him, that there has been no change in his policy at all over the last 48 hours, if he sticks with that, that's fine. It's not the truth, because you had a president that in my lifetime promoted the most protectionist mindset of any president, who now in 48 hours is promoting the most free market president in my lifetime. And so that's a change. It's a good change. We're just trying to set the record straight that there is a change. If this was where the president is going, it is a huge change from one of the major issues that the president won in 2016. Now, if the majority of his followers don't care and say, well, we don't care whether we have a huge trade deficit as long as it's Donald Trump's trade deficit, that's fine. That's cool. I don't care, because to me, trade deficits are meaningless. But it meant something back then to Donald Trump and his supporters. And now, where the president is indicating it, now trade deficits don't matter. Because either you care about evening trade deficits, which means you have to react with tariffs in some way, or you believe in free markets. And the president now believes in free markets. He's still throwing the fair trade in.
Yeah.
But remember, the populist version of fair trade is not zero tariffs across the board. For the populist, fair trade is you put tariffs and you protect your industries.
Well, and for this president, it's been about that trade balance. It's been about, why is it so lopsided on one over the other? And that's always going to be the case for most of the major nations or regions that we do trade with. You're going to have, it's going to be some level of imbalance. Sometimes it favors you in terms of what you're exporting, and sometimes it doesn't. But as you mentioned, it really is all for naught. What are you talking about? You're talking about trading your dollar, the consumer.
Right.
This isn't the nation doing this. It is collectively, but it is the consumer saying, this is what I want in exchange for my dollar. That's it. That's what it comes down to. Consumer choices. We can decide we want to go back to, you know, whatever age and put protectionist policies in. But sorry, that's an outdated policy, because right now the world is trading with each other. If we want to sit on the sidelines, we can do that. But we'll do that at the expense of killing industry here in the U.S.
The other thing I liked yesterday, some of the analysis that came out, I think you and I both read the same article in the Wall Street Journal that said that looks like the president is strategizing that he wants to have good relations with all of our trade partners in order to isolate China,
right,
which is something that we have advocated.
Totally.
If the president's going to do this, that's what we thought he was doing. We believe that what he had done previous to his new announcement yesterday, and the fact that he has seemed since really around the North Korea summit when he started mentioning zero tariffs.
Yeah.
Hopefully this means that Larry Kudlow has had an effect, and hopefully because of the screaming of the meat producers, the pork producers, any manufacturing plant that uses steel, that the president realized that he had to change up at some point because of the internal pressure. And maybe over the last couple of days is what we got from Kudlow. Maybe this was the Kudlow moment. I'm not saying it's going to last. That's why I am cautiously optimistic, as I was when he hired Larry Kudlow, when Larry Kudlow became his chief economic advisor. But I've seen this president switch too quickly.
Well, and that's what we have to also keep in mind, is that our trade partners want to know that there's long-term stability in terms of policy. And right now, the only predictability is, the only constant is, the unpredictability, the fact that you can't predict this administration on this policy, because you don't know when it's going to change. You had friendly trade partners that had an exemption, and there was a thought that they would always have that exemption, and that this really was going to be just about China. And my question is, why do you have to put industry through pain in order to negotiate? You can negotiate better deals without having to put industry through that.
And as recently as yesterday, we had said the president, because he had, you know, again tweeted out again, and then was talking about, you know, before his announcement yesterday after the meetings with the EU trade advisor, that he had talked about no tariffs, whatever. And we had said before this, we had no idea what the president ever wanted. Now we do.
Yeah.
Well, we do for the last 2 days. We know that the president now is talking about, that's a policy, zero tariffs, zero subsidies, zero caps, zero barriers. That's a now we understand exactly where the president's coming from. This is what we asked for the last, what, year and a half?
Yeah.
What is your specific policy? Hopefully, this really is the president's policy.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. And as far as selling this, you know, you and I talked about the selling of what the president now has embraced for 2 days in a row, which he calls free and fair trade, which is zero subsidies, no barriers, no tariffs, nothing. That is his goal with the European Union. Well, and that's fine. If you wish to call it free and fair trade, call it whatever you want. But as we know, the fair traders don't call zero tariffs. They haven't until yesterday called basically open trade borders. If that's what the president, that's what he claims he's looking for. That is not the traditional definition of what fair trade means.
Right. I think it will really, if they move on with this policy as discussed with the EU and the other friendly trade partners, I think the economy will basically do all the heavy lifting politically for the president. And I think maybe, you know, to answer my earlier question, really in 2020, you don't even talk about it anymore other than, look, we'll look to negotiate better deals all the time, blah, blah, blah. But I think there has to have been some kind of lesson learned here, and it's likely the screaming of the industries over the last couple of months that said, look, your Q2 numbers may look great, but anything in terms of investment going forward, I mean, when you look at the massive amount of meat right now, the glut of meat that's on the market because they can't export, that's going to be a problem. And you know, the fact that we opened up exporting raw crude a couple of years ago has done unbelievably great things for the energy sector. Well, that's one example, two examples side by side of how it can work and how it can destroy an economy.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Yeah, so I don't really want to get into a discussion of free trade versus managed trade. We've done that a million times. This is just acknowledging what happened over the last couple of days. And did Europe make some concessions? I was reading Fox News. Trump gets Europe to make concessions. Well, they're buying some soybeans, and they're opening up for the liquefied natural gas, which they were doing anyway, before that. But, yeah, they made the concession on soybeans. How much will they take? We don't know yet. But the fact is, they're willing to make that concession because the president made the biggest concession, which is he's no longer, and this is pointed out by a number of publications, not once did he mention the trade imbalance.
Right.
All he talked about was zero tariffs, zero barriers, zero caps, and those are the kind of things that are the talk of a free trader.
Right.
And I know if he wants to say free and fair, fine with me. Call it whatever you want. And if the executive branch and the president wishes to say, my position has always remained the same, and this is free and fair trade, so be it. Mm-hmm. As long as the substance is right on it, I'm happy.
Yeah, as long as the economy's moving along at a pretty good pace, and there's, without those trade barriers, I think there definitely is every reason to believe, unless you're in the tech sector over the next couple of days, that it's going to be a pretty healthy 2018 and 2019.
Right. All I can say is a couple of days ago where the president was headed, we were against the president's policy.
Mm-hmm.
After what he said for 2 days in a row now, and with the EU trade commissioner yesterday on what his goal is, we now agree with the president. And all I can say is this, we've never changed our minds on what we believe trade should be. So you can take it with you can take that for whatever it's worth. But if people want to say this is what the president was going to do all along and this shows the genius of the president, fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay with me. Take credit for it as if you've always wanted, but the fact is it's not what the president won the election on based on trade.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all, because there wasn't a mention of the trade deficit, and the president, until the last 2 days, because it's 2 days in a row now, which is a record, he had brought it up 2 days before in the last month about dropping all tariffs, but then he moved on, as we have pointed out. But the president has never, from what I know, from what I can see following him, as long as I have followed him, has ever, in a month time, promoted free trade, no barriers, no tariffs, no subsidies, no caps. He's never promoted that, ever. And if you wish to say he does, that's okay. Not going to argue with you on that, as long as the substance is there. All we can tell you is we disagreed with the president's position a couple of days ago. The last 2 days, we completely agree with the president. We haven't changed our mind.
Well, and I would hope that it's a matter of learning for the president.
So do I.
That it was a matter of listening to his advisors, because isn't that what you want if you pick... If you believe
yes.
he has the right people in place.
We were very happy when he picked Larry Kudlow.
What you're looking for, right? I think Bolton is national security advisor. You know, all of these picks that are in place. And the point that we made about who was there now as opposed to who was there in the first year. Anyone who came aboard after the first year essentially knew what the concerns were going to be. They knew what they were in for, right? They knew the unpredictable nature of the president and the going back and forth and how that's going to be a struggle, because you're going to have to be out there as a mouthpiece and the president may be saying something quite opposite on the other channel at the same time. So, but they knew what they were in for, which means that they know exactly what is asked of them. They know what they have to do. So if they're able to get through and able to get these policies done, then great. We'll see where it goes. And I think Bolton, by the way, is the right pick, not just for North Korea, but the right pick for China.
When it comes
to trade, yep. when you talk about trade and barriers and everything else, you can make the case of national security with China. You can talk about the theft of intellectual property and everything else, and how that could be a danger to national security. You can make that case. It's in the same arena. You can get there from here, which is why if you want to go down that road and put the other trade partners on the table with you and putting the pressure on China, that's exactly the way it should be done. If you're going to handle China, that's the way you do it.
And if the president's on a learning curve here, I agree with you. I compliment mm-hmm. him for, you know, willing to listen. If he did listen to all the different manufacturers that told him, look, you're going to have a great second quarter. Mm-hmm. Second quarter is going to look great. We can't wait. We can't wait for the numbers to come out. And if we have been passionate and at times angry with the president on this, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday. The reason is because we want him to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want the Democrats in control. I want this president to succeed. And if the president, and I hope that tomorrow we can say the same thing. It's been 2 days in a row now, and hopefully this stays, and hopefully the president has come to the realization that free trade, no tariffs, no barriers, no caps, no subsidies is the way to go, and it's truly what he now feels in his heart and thinks in his brain. And if there's been a learning curve here and he has come to that learning curve, I would be more than pleased. I still have a little bit of my doubts, because I just remember the tweet that Stossel wrote to him 2 days ago mm-hmm. when he was saying, we've lost $150 billion to China. He goes, you didn't lose anything, Mr. President. There wasn't a loss. So that worries me a little bit, that was just 48 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I will give the president, this looks like this is a work in progress in his mind. And when he met with the EU Trade Commissioner yesterday, it was, as I've said, we went from the most, a month ago, the most protectionist mindset of a president in my lifetime to yesterday, the most free trade president in my lifetime. The things that he said. I hope this is the mindset. over the last 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best you can hope for, is that, all right, there was something learned, and you move on. That's the best you can hope for. Because if that's the case, then that's a new path forward. And that takes the unpredictable nature down a notch.
Well, we wish to see economic growth, and we wish to see the president has done so many great things.
Well, I want to see the tax cuts in full effect.
A couple of friends, I said, well, you've really got angry at the president about trade. I said, yeah, because he's done so much good. My anger doesn't come from a dislike of the president. My anger comes from the dislike of a policy. And a policy that I believe would hurt the economy and would also hurt his chances of reelection. Because I don't see anybody else right now that I'd rather have as president of the United States than Donald Trump. I also know how sensitive Republican presidents are when it comes to voting time and an economy and a successful economy. Because that's, you and I have said this, the one thing, forget about all the insane rhetoric that you hear from Maxine Waters and collusion and all this stuff. The thing that will bring down a Donald Trump, irrespective of your passion for him, is bad economic times. Or an economy that looked like that it was going good, for example, the first year, year and a half, and then it reverses the direction.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that's where we are. Coming up here, interesting, the stories coming out over the last day about Flint, Michigan.
Yes. And the lead. It turns out that the measurements and the hype wasn't as bad as what the media was saying it was. In fact, it wasn't out of a normal fluctuation in terms of the range. You know, a lot of people had it bad, had it wrong because they said it was about the source of the water. The source of the water had changed it, and that was the lead problem was coming from the source. Mm-hmm. Actually, the lead problem was coming from the leaching of the lines, the actual pipes. But was it a real problem? Turns out the numbers actually didn't live up to that.
Plus, the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones has said the players must stand. By the way, has the NFL responded yet?
Haven't heard anything yet. I thought they were still at the table.
Right, but I'll check, but I didn't see the NFL respond to Jerry Jones and say, no, sorry, this is a league thing. You can't make that decision on your own.
Well, because, I mean, they're going to make a league policy, aren't they? That's the whole idea of sitting down with the PA, right?
Yeah. But Jerry Jones made it clear, no, this is what our team will do.
Yeah, so we'll see. You talk about having some pull in the industry. In the league, he's got it.
He's got a little,
just slightly.
He's the Manchester United of the NFL.
Yeah,
I still think they're the richest. I think Manchester United still is the richest franchise in the world.
Right,
sports franchise.
Right,
soccer. That shit's just wrong. All right, I'm gonna get a more hate email for that. 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general is beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time, is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions, where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed, because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32nds in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster, and in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket.
run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Oh, boy. Will be interesting to see what happens to the NASDAQ tomorrow.
Yeah, the tech stocks, apparently, a number of them sliding during the day. Facebook missed earnings, but I don't get where it's this. I don't know what justifies, a 24% drop in their shares?
After hours trading, yeah, down right now 20%.
Yeah, so and you know, maybe that'll change. They were off the mark on their advertising revenue as well, but earnings overall didn't hit the mark, and you know, it didn't look like a catastrophe the way I was looking at it in terms of, you know, earnings. Maybe it's just that they thought there was just going to be this upward trend for their earnings for quite some time, and that wasn't the case for this quarter. I don't know.
Well, reading here, Wall Street Journal, when it was down 23%,
mm-hmm.
now it's down 20% right now after
right.
hours, but if that held tomorrow, it would wipe out 23%, $130 billion of the company's value.
Yeah.
That would be more than the entire market value of McDonald's.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty massive.
Wow.
Pretty massive chunk. If it holds. You know, that's the up and down of trading. We'll see where it ends up, and because a lot of people will look at this as an opportunity to go in and buy.
Why is the revenue growth slower than expected? Are advertisers finding out that Facebook and social media might not be as effective as it was sold to them? Because look, there's controversy. If you have a TV show and it's very controversial, mm-hmm. well, you can focus in on that one TV show. Say we're not going to go there anymore because it's too controversial, and still go to other parts. But any of the problems that Facebook has had, to me, would not affect me if they were an effective marketing tool.
Well, because what are you looking for? Traffic, right? It's all about
traffic.
Location, 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 which is to be where the traffic is. Well, the traffic is on Facebook. I mean, it just is. Right.
So what isn't, why is it slower? Isn't it performing as they thought? Did they overpromise to the advertisers what they said the impact of advertising on Facebook would be? These are all questions. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they didn't reach it, or were they just way too optimistic on what they thought the growth potential could be?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, don't know. You know, but other tech stocks, you know, took a hit in after hours trading. In fact, Twitter and Snap both fell in after hours trading as a result of this, you know, hit on Facebook. But it, you know, often these things are short lived.
Well, it says, you know, daily active users in the U.S. and Canada measured at 185 million, flat with the first quarter, up slightly from a year earlier.
Yeah.
Facebook's daily user base in Europe edged down to 279 million accounts from 282 million in the prior quarter.
Yeah.
That's still a huge audience.
Yeah.
Potential audience.
That's my
have.
Point is that I look at that and I still see, you know, this massive, massive, you know, giant of a community, if you will. Opportunity for advertisers. I just don't, you know, if it's down slightly, I don't see a 20% or 25% drop. That doesn't.
I don't get why
it's down so sharp.
That would be my point.
Right. You know,
you're not talking about, from what I know, revenues down.
Well, we're not really 25%. Talking about a massive scandal. It's not like, you know, the CEO Zuckerberg was, you know, caught stealing from the company or something, you know, like that. I mean, what has the scandal been about lately? It's been about, you know, political ads, and were they targeting conservatives, or were they, you know, all the things basically he was testifying about. But I don't see that as a business killer necessarily until the numbers really start to show that. If you're down a few million subscribers, all right, a bit of a concern. But is it a 20% drop concern? I don't see that. I don't know, you know, why such a big drop.
Some worried that the results suggest growth could be threatened not just for Facebook, but for also tech companies that depend on consumer spending ever more time on their digital devices.
Yeah. I mean, my point with Facebook is, you know, once they get to, you know, pretty much every person on the planet, there is no growth, right? At some point, you're gonna reach the top, and then what do investors see, right?
For example, that's not going to happen for Red Eye Radio for a while.
It'll be a few months.
We don't think we
reach every listener.
We're not going to get to 7 billion here
right.
anytime within the next year.
We're on our way.
Yes.
But...
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. TeamRunSmart.com, great website by Freightliner. The Team Run Smart pros, just talked to a couple of them not too long ago on the road. Henry Albert, one of them. Had a great conversation with him about really incredible fuel mileage that he's getting out there in his Freightliner. And you can check out so many great things at the website, TeamRunSmart.com. 56,000-plus members so far. You can be a member, too, and share some great information and get some great information on trucking and the industry at TeamRunSmart.com by Freightliner.
Well, there it is. As we know, a lot of NFL teams kick off training camp today.
Yeah.
Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones on Wednesday said the team players will be required to stand on the sidelines for the national anthem this season, days after the NFL said it would freeze a new policy on the polarizing issue amid ongoing negotiations with the players' union. Our policy is you stand during the anthem, toe on the line.
Wow. Okay.
So you just don't stand for the anthem as a Dallas Cowboy. Your toe has to be on that line.
What if it's not
you
on the line?
You toe the line.
Which toe? What if one toe is, but the rest aren't?
Instant replay. our policy is you stand during the anthem, toe on the line, Jones said Wednesday during the team press conference.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. I don't know how that affects, and I don't know what I have not seen any response yet from the NFL to what Jerry Jones said, saying, well, the Dallas Cowboys can't do that because it has to be a league policy.
Right.
You would expect that that would come out.
Unless he's been given some kind of information by the league of what they're going to try and tell the Players Association is going to be their policy.
Or he just says, I'm Jerry Jones, damn it.
Yeah. Well, he's got that kind of pull. Let's see how long that lasts. Because if the NFL comes out with a policy saying it'll be up to each team to decide if the players are going to be on the field or not for the anthem, and it will be a team decision, not a player decision, that's the NFL, that's the organization essentially putting that off on the teams, and each of the teams can say, all right,
wow,
we're not.
That's a great point. Is that why Jones felt like he could say that? Because they're going to say the teams make their own decision.
Well,
but then the players union would have to agree to that. If they're meeting with the players union would have to say yes, which means the players union has given the approval for some teams to punish players for doing it.
Unless there's already word out that Jones got that's what's agreed upon. That's basically going to be the agreement out of these
right.
negotiations. But we don't know. Who knows? It could be just Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones. You know, saying, no, this is the way it's going to be. I own the team. You're going to stand for the anthem. So we'll see.
All I don't know. It doesn't seem like football season's ready to go yet. I don't know why. I just don't in the football.
Yeah. What do we got coming up a week from today?
Yeah, the Hall of Fame game would be a week from today. Yep. I forgot they now do it on a Thursday.
Yeah.
It used to be on a Saturday, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. And so I just, you know.
I liked it better on Saturday because I've been working this shift for so long. I could always see that game on Saturday. That was always a cool thing to see that game on Saturday, the kind of the christening of the season. And you and I don't get to see the primetime.
But I finally, like I said, I finally figured out when the other day. It was because I was always wondering, why have I seemed over the last decade or so to lose my interest in sports? And then I realized, well, one of the reasons is so many sporting events happen when you and I are sleeping because we have to work.
Right.
I have missed so many sporting events. Mm-hmm. I have, and here's the thing, too. I have not seen a Super Bowl. Do you remember that I used to, the first couple of years, I would take off for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
We had a personal day, and I don't anymore.
Right.
But I used to take off for the Super Bowl, but really it's been, because we've been together 13 years, I think the first 2 years I took it off, and then I haven't since. So it's been 11 years since I've seen a Super Bowl. So I guess if you're not watching a Super Bowl, and you have... And I didn't miss a Super Bowl my entire life before then. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Right.
And I miss a lot of hockey games and other sports that I would want to watch during the week all the time. You never get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm blaming that. I'm blaming the show.
Yeah. For my lot of people do. It's okay.
I wonder if any other owners will come out and say the same thing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the league says and what their agreement with the Players Association is, you know, what they've come to, whatever terms they've come to, right?
I just wonder if any of the players have commented on Jones saying that.
The Cowboys players?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I didn't see anything.
I'm looking for some criticism here in some news articles, and so far Jerry Jones, Cowboys cannot stay in the locker room for the anthem.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes you wonder what the league is going to come up
with. Some of the headlines. Jerry Jones keeps making the NFL's mishandling of the anthem worse.
Well, Jones does, or the NFL does. I mean, he made it worse when he took a knee with the team.
We said that at that time.
Yeah.
I really haven't seen a response yet. I'm looking for a response. You know, there's the sports writers doing it, but I've not seen a response from the NFL Players Association stating, wait a minute, Jerry Jones can't do that because this is a league thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. But Jones said it yesterday. Interesting article in the New York Times yesterday, was it not?
What's that?
The article, "The Children of Flint Were Not Poisoned."
Yeah, it is interesting because the National Review did a story kind of based on that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The story is about 3 days old.
Yeah, the National Review, Kyle Smith writing, no detectable lead poisoning in Flint after all. So it breaks it down into the numbers, making the point that lead is dangerous, and certainly it is proper to be vigilant about it. But in terms of what was reported, or the concern, I guess, of the safe levels, well, the CDC basically recommends the medical treatment, the level basically at which medical treatment is recommended would be 45 micrograms per deciliter in a human, in a child, because that was the concern. The children in Flint were showing high levels of lead, too high of levels. But how many children in Flint tested at that level? Again, 45 micrograms per deciliter? Zero. Then you look at what the authors of the Times piece, again, according to the National Review article on it, note that 5 micrograms per deciliter is considered a reference level, right? Mm-hmm. And this is again in human body, not in the water supply. So before the changeover, the water changeover, the source changeover, it was 2.2% of Flint children tested above that 5 micrograms per deciliter, which again is considered the reference level. After the switchover, it rose to 3.7%. So it did rise, but it rose to 3.7. Now, just 20 years ago, in the late 90s, no celebrities talking about us, this kind of problem, but in the water in Flint, nearly 45% of the children there in Flint had lead levels above that reference point. 45% of the children.
And it all came partly from the op-ed piece. It was in the New York Times. Dr. Hernan Gomez and Kim Dietrich, experts in toxicology and environmental health, and they gave the same statistics you did. But just for the beginning of it, without the statistics here, mm-hmm. the actual measurements of lead, right. As they start out, words are toxic too, labeling Flint's children as poisoned, as many journalists and activists have done since the city's water was found to be contaminated with lead in 2014, unjustly stigmatizes our generation. Let's be clear, it's unacceptable for any child that any child was exposed to drinking water with elevated lead concentrations. Yeah. We all know that lead is a powerful neurotoxicant, and there is no safe level, that the very young are particularly vulnerable, and that the long-term exposure to low to moderate levels of lead is associated with decreased IQs and other cognitive and behavior problems, including criminal behavior. There is no reason to expect that what happened for a year and a half in Flint will inevitably lead to such results. The casual use of the word poisoned, which suggests that the affected children are irreparably brain damaged, is grossly inaccurate. In a city that already battles high poverty and crime rates, this is particularly problematic. And then goes through all the stats that you just listed.
Yeah, right. And that's, again, there's nothing wrong, again, with focusing the attention. The problem is when the attention becomes something that is false, that is based in falsehoods. Should there be a concern that it rose before the switchover from 2.2% of children having above that reference point level of lead in their blood to 3.7? Yeah, that should be a concern. But working on the problem, working on the solution has to be, it's always going to have, there's always going to be a great level of passion. But the truth, the numbers mean something. It's not that this isn't a zero problem, but it's not to the level of what the activists were portraying it as, and that's the concern.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
A group of 11 House Republicans introduced 5 articles of impeachment against Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein Wednesday evening. The impeachment articles accuse Rosenstein of intentionally withholding documents and information from Congress. Failure to comply with congressional subpoenas and abuse of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It was not immediately clear whether the House of Representatives would consider the resolution before lawmakers begin the August recess Thursday afternoon. The House will reconvene on September 4th. The resolution states it will be referred to the committee, meaning the Judiciary Committee, for further review. That language suggests the full House will not immediately consider the articles of impeachment. Then why do it?
Yeah. You're either going to do something about it or you're not.
My point is, what are they attempting to get? by doing this?
I mean, because do they believe this is going to get them anything in return? I mean, do they believe that the FBI is going to hand over documents that finally something's going to happen? If this is non-binding, if it's really not going to be a full measure, then what are you attempting to do? You send a message of what? That we're not going to do anything about it?
Well, Mark Meadows, who was part of the 11 Republicans, said it would be possible to effect a so-called privilege resolution on impeaching Rosenstein as early as Thursday morning, which would require a vote within 2 days, although the impending House recess would likely delay that vote unless it were held quickly. What's the point that you're trying to get to?
Right.
Do you believe you have the votes to impeach? Does the Republican leadership even wish to go down this road right now?
Right. Because I suspect that's the case, that leadership really isn't looking to do anything and move in this direction, and they just basically want to kind of shake their fist in the air. But I don't know what the point would be other than to put yourself on record for wanting to impeach Rosenstein.
For 9 months, we've asked for the documents. That's all we want, Meadows said. Not only have subpoenas been ignored, but information has been hidden. Efforts have been stonewalled. We've caught the Department of Justice hiding information, redacting information that they should not have redacted, Jordan charged, adding that Rosenstein had attempted to intimidate House staffers with subpoenas. Remember, that goes back to February.
Though. Yeah, right.
So what's the if you don't have the votes and the Republican leadership doesn't wish to go this way, what's the point in doing this? Where is the win of substance or the political win in doing this? What, and I ask this of Republicans, it's something that you hear quite often on the show, what do you want? What's your end goal? What's the game at the end? What do you hope to achieve?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Welcome and good morning. Thank you for being here. Just updating me that breaking story out of Beijing.
We've been following a breaking story over the last 15 to 20 minutes. Wall Street Journal just a few minutes ago reporting that a person exploded a bomb just outside the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. This happened at around 1 p.m. local time, leaving the bomber injured, but no others, according to embassy officials there. But again, a bomb going off. This said over the last 15 or 20 minutes, several news outlets have been reporting a huge explosion sound heard near the embassy, a U.S. embassy in Beijing. But they weren't certain at that time what that was. There was some smoke also near that scene, as you can imagine. And now the Wall Street Journal and others reporting that it was a bomb that was set off just outside the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. Again, the bomber was injured, no other injuries.
Anybody claim responsibility?
Not yet.
I see ISIS claimed responsibility in Toronto.
ISIS also with an attack in southern Syria. That's being reported as well. But that's kind of a constant battle going on in that region.
866-90-RED-EYE. I do want to play an audio cut here. You know, we've talked about the North Korea summit. Well, Mike Pompeo went before the Senate yesterday and took questions from Democratic Senator Ed Markey. And, said that, you know, the Trump administration, he believes, is being taken for a ride. Asking him questions like, you know, have they denuclearized? Are they still creating, you know, nuclear material? And he said, you know, yes, they are. And, you know, then he uses the quotes from Trump and then, you know, asks Pompeo to answer them. And Pompeo did a great job. He actually did. You know, he said, look, all this stuff's been going on, you know, was going on when we took office. And what I like, though, is I want to play this exchange back and forth here where he talks about the difference. And it's something that you and I have talked about that the administration has to make clear. And they did yesterday. But I wish the president would also make it clear, because as we have said, the goal is not the goal is not, in my opinion, the overall goal is not to get is to assure the people that North Korea is going to denuclearize, because odds are they aren't. You approach it, you have the summit, we understand playing the politics, but what you have to make clear to the American people, as we stated on yesterday's show, is not that, well, no, we're going to go for an attempt to see if they will. The goal is to find out whether they will and whether they won't. And if they won't, we're not going to treat them like previous administrations did and keep this going on year after year of negotiations and reducing sanctions and giving them benefits here. No, it stops. That someone has to take the tough line on North Korea. That don't try to oversell it with the miracle that North Korea is going to denuclearize. Talk about your successes and the fact they are coming forward, but still the great doubts that you have about it. And those doubts you hear from Bolton. You hear those doubts from Pompeo. You know that inside the administration, that's why you and I, when the whole North Korea thing was going on, we said, well, look, you're going to have to wait a long time to figure out whether this thing's working or not, 6 months, a year, because first of all, you've got to get a deal done. And then after you get the deal done, that means nothing. The only thing that means anything is inspectors getting unfettered access.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's down the road a couple of years. You know, you won't know. But make it clear to the American people, and Pompeo did yesterday, that there is going to be a difference between the way the Trump administration treats North Korea as to previous administrations and what they did. And here's a little bit of that.
Senator, we have...
So I am afraid that at this point, the United States, the Trump administration, is being taken for a ride.
Fear not, Senator. Fear not.
There's no evidence to the contrary.
Fear not, Senator.
There's no evidence.
Senator, fear not. May I?
Yes, please.
I guess you didn't ask a question, so I'll...
No, that's all right. Yeah, again, please answer.
Fear not. This administration has taken enormously constructive actions that have put us in a place that is far better than in either of the two previous administrations, one Republican, one Democrat. We have put sanctions regime in place that is unequaled. We are continuing to enforce that sanctions regime. We've made incredibly clear that we will continue to enforce that sanctions regime until such time as denuclearization, as we've defined it, is complete. Pressure on the regime is clearly being felt. We have lots of work to do. But unlike previous administrations, Senator, we have no intention of allowing the U.N. sanctions, the world's sanctions that we led the charge to have put in place, to allowing those sanctions to either be lifted or not enforced. And until such time as Chairman Kim fulfills the commitment he made, which I am incredibly hopeful that he will, those sanctions will remain. We have not been taken for a ride, Senator.
We're going to disagree.
I hope you can sleep a little bit better tonight.
One quick...
And that's what you have to make clear. There is no miracle here. What you do, what you can do as the United States, you put in the sanctions and you hope for the best. And part of the negotiations is, again, being hopeful, giving the benefit of the doubt, at least publicly, that you have to do in a very, very careful way, as we've said, when you're dealing with it. Otherwise, you're kowtowing to a murderous dictator. But you have to open the door to negotiations. You do have to. You do have to compliment. You can't go in and say, well, this SOB, we really don't want to do negotiations, but we're going to do it anyway. You have to schmooze a little bit. It's just the reality of any type of negotiation. But I'm glad the administration is making clear, because you and I always have known that this is the difference between this administration and previous administrations that inside the White House, the Pompeos, the Boltons, they know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they have always been extremely suspicious and extremely, probably even cynical, if you actually talk to them off the record, that North Korea will actually do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not for the United States to guarantee that North Korea is going to denuclearize. It's to do the best you can in a negotiation, and then if it doesn't work, you let North Korea and you let the world know, that's it. The sanctions stay. We're now playing hardball from now on. We're not going to do what previous administrations did. You're getting nothing. You don't get anything from the West. You don't, and you put the pressure on China. You put it on North Korea. You put it on, I know that our one of our lovely callers, she listens all the time, immigrated to the United States from South Korea. She's called us numerous times before. And, you know, and she talks about the liberal government in South Korea, that you also put the pressure on South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
That reunification and trade, these things aren't going to happen unless they cooperate. And if they step out of line, there will be hell to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Bolton knows that, Pompeo knows that, and Trump knows that. But I also know that outwardly, when you when you promote to the world what you're doing, you always put a measure of hope that it's going to get done. But did the president, in my opinion, oversell it a little bit? Yeah, we talked about him overselling it a little bit, that there aren't any great concessions that the North Koreans made that make it seem as if they're actually willing to denuclearize. We looked at each and every one as possibly a stall tactic. Okay, we'll look to see what we can do with the MIAs. That could take a couple of years. Until we get that done, we're not going to move forward. With this also, as we all know, been reported, that isn't going as smoothly as they thought it was going to do to be. The one rocket launching site, which are disassembling. Okay, you can disassemble one. Does that really stop your nuclear program? No. Had they done a nuclear test? No. Are they still building nuclear materials? As Pompeo said, yes, they are. Are they? He wouldn't answer the question on the submarines. Are they actively, putting together a, you know, nuclear submarine capability? He would not answer that question in public session. And so I don't think they're being fooled at all. I think they're trying to see what they can get in this case from North Korea.
I think, you know, the theory that we ran the other night talking about, and I think it's a plausible theory, that part of the strategy could be that you put them, North Korea, Kim Jong-un, on display in front of the world as if, all right, we're going to make this big deal, right? We're changing the world here. Knowing full well that chances are he's not going to cooperate, but that you gave him every chance and you did it in front of the world, and that if he doesn't, it's on him. One of the things you saw, the dynamic, because it's Trump, was that everyone was making Trump out to be the bad guy in the war of words leading up to what eventually became that summit. Well, they wanted Trump to be they wanted you to believe Trump was the bad guy in that equation, right? Now, with the liberal media and liberals in general, that's not going to change. Where it's important that there is every ounce of due diligence is on display is with all of our allies and the people even that aren't so friendly with us, in the event that Kim Jong-un is headed down the road of nuclear-capable submarines. We already know about his reach with missiles. And if he's headed in that direction, that we take action and we can show the world and demonstrate to the world we were willing to bring peace.
Let me put it this way. it's not so important how big or delicious the carrot is that you extend. It's whether you're actually willing to use the stick.
Mm-hmm.
And previous administrations have thrown out huge carrots, but when North Korea did not do what they said they were going to do, wasn't willing to use the stick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The question is that's what you make clear. Look, we're going to throw out a big carrot, but that means nothing. What really means something is if they don't bite on the carrot, then we've got the stick.
Right.
And we're going to use the stick.
Right. And I think that the one of the first things you would have to do in that equation is what? Demonstrate that you went to pretty much every possible measure of
right.
making this a peaceful or having a peaceful situation on the peninsula. And that will be on full display for everyone. Not that they expect, I don't know that they expect or even have a timeline as to when a Kim Jong-un might have a nuclear-capable submarine or anything else or whatever else they Pompeo or anyone else suspects he might be doing. But you are preparing for something that I think still today, even a John Bolton believes that is going to be about as close to inevitable as you can get with a Kim Jong-un. You're not going to say it's going to happen, but man, there's a pretty good chance that if he's developing this, he has every intention of using it at some level. And if that's the case, then you want to make sure that you've exhausted everything up to that point so that there is really no... Because if you think about it, was a preemptive strike on the table before the summit? I don't think it was. I don't think that the U.S. could have had a preemptive strike situation. It would be extremely rare. You would have to go so far in proving what you knew was about to happen that it was indeed inevitable that he was going to strike Kim Jong-un, whether it was American soil or our allies or whatever it might be. I just don't believe that that was on the table. I think after a situation like this, if he accelerates his nukes, and the reach and delivery of those nukes, then I think a preemptive strike is on the table. I think that's something that with the international community, you could show. Again, you would still have to demonstrate that you've got proof that it's inevitable. But I think it changes things greatly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Other news on Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal reported that one of Cohen's other tapes was a lengthy conversation with CNN's Chris Cuomo, who aired the Trump tape on Tuesday.
What?
Per the Wall Street Journal, quote, Cohen assured the reporter that he wasn't running a tape.
Okay, I'm sorry, but that's just funny.
I know.
Yeah.
Cohen assured the reporter that he wasn't running a tape, according to people familiar with the matter,
mm-hmm.
but he taped it anyway.
Of course. You know how you know he's not running a tape? When he says he's not running a tape.
Cuomo and CNN had no comment. Cohen taped conversations with other reporters, too.
What? That's outrageous. All right. Now,
isn't it good that I know you have the same policy as I do. It doesn't matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're out in public, if you're not sitting inside of your home,
Right.
If I'm not inside of my home, inside the pantry closet with the door closed and the lights off.
Yeah.
And I say pantry because that's in like the exact middle of my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a tornado comes, that's where I would go.
Right.
It's the most isolated portion of my house. Other than that, you and I are the same way. We're always under the policy that we're always on the air. Somebody's always recording sometime.
Mainly because they are. I'm not paranoid, but seriously, they are. They're watching me. Now, I believe I have to answer to a higher power. You know, so
your wife.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Well, who'd you think I was talking about? Oh, that higher power. Yes. Well, of course. Yes. Well, of course that. But more immediately, my wife.
The deity that the Democrats are now starting to believe in.
You're right. For VDO Roadlog, here's your forecast.
Excessive heat warnings and heat advisories stretch from the desert southwest to the Pacific Northwest, impacting several metro areas again today, including Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Portland, and San Diego. Meanwhile, the threat for heavy rainfall and flooding will persist into the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Flash flood watches are in effect from North Carolina to New York, as this seemingly endless pattern has been locked in place for the better part of the week. Most of the heavy rain today will be north of New Jersey into the New York City and Boston metro area, extending up into Maine. We'll see a clear swath behind that front from western Pennsylvania into Ohio, southern Indiana, the lower Tennessee Valley, and most of Texas. Now, there is another cold front extending out of the north, sweeping in through the central plains. So look for light showers from northern Texas through northern Illinois. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Anytime, 24 hours a day, say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric. I'm Gary. We go to Ian in California about North Korea and the audio that we played from Mike Pompeo earlier, Secretary of State. Ian, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good.
I listened to a little bit. That too, and then I was listening to you guys commenting on it in the last hour, and I'm going to make it kind of short. This is something that might have been said a little bit, but I don't think it can be said enough, because it's easy to sit back and, you know, think, you know, things aren't moving fast enough, but you think back on the last 20 years or whatever, you say, how far have we gotten then? But here's what I got to say. I like these Democrats, like saying they're being taken and all this, but my thing to say is this, and it can't be said enough, is when's the last time we seen missile coming out of there? If I remember right, before Trump went over there, it wasn't a week or a month go by that there wasn't missiles coming out of mm-hmm. North Korea, and people were nervous, and I haven't seen any coming out of there lately, I don't think. So they apparently are making some progress, and that's pretty much all I had to say.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Ian. Progress like that is not progress the moment the next missile comes up. So if you talk about progress, you would want to see someone like a Pompeo or anyone else in that position that could tell us and really demonstrate to us that they don't have the ability, that they have diminished or they have destroyed their own ability to deliver said weapon. And so the fact that they've, you know, hit the pause button certainly is a positive. But again, that is all for naught the moment the next missile goes up. So the question is, again, long term, what does he have the ability to do? He still has the ability. They're still working in the direction of building their nuke program even further. That's what we're hearing. That's what Pompeo is telling us. Wouldn't answer the question on the nuclear subs. And that tells me there's probably a great deal of concern there. And so I think we can just assume that they're working in that direction as well. But you have to assume, you know, just as a layman or as a citizen of the world here, we just have to assume that it is. He is still as dangerous as he could be.
And I believe the last nuclear test was last September. Remember after that mountain site collapsed?
Yeah, right, yeah.
And, you know, they're, you know, wondering whether there are no nuclear tests, partly because of the negotiations going on, but partly because there may be pressure from China because they believe that, you know, radiation came out of it and China's right next door.
Yeah, right.
And so that's one of the things that they are concerning about, whether the Chinese are wondering whether North Korea can do nuclear tests in a safe manner,
right,
or a relatively safe manner. But
right,
I think more importantly, if you don't have for a significant amount of time nuclear testing,
mm-hmm,
missile testing, but they already know that they, you know, they, you can, you know, shoot a missile off and,
mm-hmm,
you know, and, but there's other ways that you can judge, you know, what a missile does. Now,
mm-hmm,
I know because my father worked on you know, rocket engines for the longest time. My father helped develop the Minuteman missile ICBM in the 1960s. Worked both on the rocket engines and the guidance system, both of them. So most rocket tests are done on the ground, not in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't want to actually test it in the air, you do, but most of the testing of the actual engine, knowing whether it's going to work or not, is done on the ground. The fact that if you see a long-term suspension in nuclear testing probably is a better indicator that they're not advancing past where they already were in September of last year.
Right.
So, and again, but the whole point is, remember, the point they want to get to is denuclearization. And it's the fact that you're not producing nuclear material anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not, you don't have the capability to produce a bomb.
Exactly. That's what it comes down
right
to. Once, if they can demonstrate it, we have good reason or proof that there is no ability at that point, that they have destroyed their own ability or, you know, they've complied with the agreement. But, you know, we heard from Pompeo, that's not the case. They're still working in the direction of developing their nuclear program. To what extent? We don't know. I'm guessing Pompeo has a better idea. But you always assume that nothing really has changed. Is it a positive that there is no show of power by Kim Jong-un? Well, okay, yeah, I guess. Except for the fact that the ultimate show of power would be really one strike, and that would be a massive strike on the U.S. or another ally of ours, another enemy of North Korea. So that's the real show of power, and I don't think anyone puts Kim Jong-un outside that possibility in terms of that kind of strike or that kind of effort.
Well, and let's be honest, the mainstream media wants it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
They want to criticize the president when he's too tough, and then criticize the president when they believe that he is conceding too much.
Exactly. He was the evil one in the war of words, and now he's the evil one when he goes to the table. No, you can't win when you're Donald Trump as president with the liberal media, and that's going to be the case. But it gets down to what we can demonstrate to our allies and to those that aren't necessarily our allies. You know, because if it gets to the point where there is going to be a preemptive strike that is necessary, whether it's this administration or any other, then at least we can say that we've crossed our T's, dotted our I's, and we shouldn't need much of permission by China or anyone else in that region or a President Moon Jae-in to the south of Kim Jong-un. In South Korea.
You know, what I here's, and you and I have talked about this, and I don't know the answer to it, except it has to be quite sophisticated. The spying apparatus that we have today on, for example, on a North Korea. Mm-hmm. What can our satellites see today? What kind of sensors do we have? What is our, you know, I remember when we talked about John Brennan, and this was one of the criticisms of John Brennan in the CIA, was that he exposed a double agent that we had inside of ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it Al-Qaeda? I forgot which one it was. Mm. But we, and you know, and so I wonder what type of surveillance we actually have. When you look at some a country like North Korea, which may not have as well, does not have as wide as a transportation system, for example, of China. China right. could have 100 different roads where you could have a convoy of trucks going down
mm-hmm.
that were feeding the materials for a particular nuclear site. Probably not the case in North Korea.
No.
More easy to identify it. I mean, what is the technology that we have? And are we to the point where we can tell them, look, you can't cheat. You cheat, we'll know it.
Yeah, well,
but even to that point, you just put the inspectors in, and once he mm-hmm. says no inspectors, then it's done.
Yeah, but which we're not going to get unfettered access. This administration, I think, would probably be more successful maybe than the past administrations in getting greater access. In fact, you could probably argue the point right now, we've kind of had that. If you look at Pompeo sitting down with Kim Jong-un, and that kind of access, I guess, to him. But your point on their infrastructure, it's crumbling. It's by most modern standards, some would say almost non-existent, to the point of being able to facilitate the kind of supplies, I guess, and also dispatch his own forces, because in order to set something off, if he were to attack, whether it was South Korea or another ally of ours, then one of the things that would happen is he would probably put forces in place in many strategic areas. Not that they're not there already, but they would be, of course, bolstered by a number of things, whatever he had available, anticipating that there was going to be a counterattack. And so, you know, there's that kind of movement you would look for. And I don't know, I really don't know what he has available to him. But one of the great things about putting the getting together with his other trade partners and imposing such great sanctions is that it limits him. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good thing. That means his resources are down to slim to none, and being able to facilitate something large. It would likely be that one-off attack, and the question is, what kind of weapon would be delivered?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll-free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Just reading this headline here. California city threatens waiters with jail for serving straws.
Okay.
Santa Barbara, California is threatening waiters with jail if they offer straws to customers. The city recently banned plastic straws from restaurants, bars, and other food establishments in what officials claim is an environmental crackdown through the use of social engineering. Prohibiting the provision of plastic beverage straws and restricting the provision of plastic stirrers and cutlery in connection to cases where the customer requests the items will initiate a change in customer behavior and will further serve the city's goal of reducing plastic litter, the city states. Waiters will be given a written warning on the first offense, but on the second offense, they will receive a fine not exceeding $100,000 imprisonment for a term not exceeding 6 months, according to
what,
the city.
What are you in for? I gave a guy a straw. I gave a guy a straw. What do you mean, to snort cocaine or something? No. I worked at Applebee's. I gave him a straw. For like snorting cocaine? No, for drinking his tea.
And I love this one. Interestingly enough, and this story came out a couple of weeks ago, Seattle-based Starbucks is going strawless in all of its stores by 2020, but the coffee company is replacing the plastic straws with lids that use even more plastic.
Even more plastic. They're thicker. They're thicker. Woohoo! We're winning! Yeah. Yeah, here's the problem. Well, first of all, my question is, the waiter is going to get fined. Aren't they imposing this? The new rule is on the restaurants, the establishment. So is it the establishment? Are these contraband straws? Are they accusing waiters of smuggling straws in? Because how would you get the straw? If you're a waiter, you're going to get it from the supplies, from the restaurant, the people you work for. Why is the server going to get
right? The server's not bringing in their own straws, are they?
Are they smuggling straws in? Is straw smuggling a thing?
Well, that would give a new definition to the straw man.
Yes, the straw man argument.
The straw man argument, right? Wait a minute, I'm just a waiter. I'm not smuggling in the straws. The right. restaurant has the straws available. Why do I do 6 months?
Why not? How about this? Possession of a straw. I really want them to do this. Possession of a straw. The user. Right? You bring your own straw.
In California, you can now, after the court ruling mm-hmm. of earlier this week, mm-hmm. possess a gun outside the home.
Yeah.
But not a straw.
Not a straw. They'll put you behind bars. Six months.
Look, it was an assault straw.
Yeah. Here is the question: how far do they go with it? Because you can order your own straws online and take them to the restaurant.
Here's the question I have for all schools, because this could change the culture drastically.
Mm.
Can you use straws in schools for spit wads?
No. You got to spit them directly out of your mouth.
Okay.
You better have good aim.
It's a very important question mm-hmm. for anybody who remembers elementary school or junior high or in some cases senior high.
Yeah.
I think we probably stopped doing that by college, I think.
Some of the fast food restaurants are market testing the paper straws. So I guess we'll see where that goes. But you know that what that will be next. Well, look at all of the paper straws in the landfills. Look at all of the trees we're killing for paper straws. Stop drinking. I think that's the problem. Stop drinking beverage.
If we stop drinking and eating, we'd all lose weight
right.
and save our landfill.
Well, just stop existing.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.